This the moment when air becomes glass.
Here's poet Chico Sierra reading his poem, Sometimes We Break.
The stillness suffocates. My heartbeat slows. I watch it pulsate. And in the quiet, I see her name over and over again. I tell the clouds I love her. How could you not? The glass shatters. An answer.
Chico Sierra is a Kansas City visual and performing artist who has just released his first collection of poetry. I'm Brian Ellison, and artist Chico Sierra is here in the studio with us today on KCUR Central Standard. Hi, Chico.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
It's really nice to have you here. You've done painting and sculpture and photography. You draw. In fact, there's some of your drawings in this book that is coming out. You're also a musician, but here you are with a book of poetry. I should say it's called Air Becomes Glass. A lot of that poetry seems to be about your childhood and your upbringing. Tell us where you grew up.
I grew up in El Paso, Texas, which is a border town. Just across the other side is Juarez, Mexico. So those two cities are sort of intertwined. But yeah,
what do you remember from growing up there?
I remember growing up pretty, I guess, being a weird kid in a poor neighborhood.
What do you mean weird?
Just I guess sensitive. Like I wasn't very like. I mean, I have four sisters. They sort of like were my influences. So I was just and they sort of informed my like. How I should react to things, and I think that, with machismo culture and Chicano culture, this is just not the way boys should be or whatever. I was just a weird kid all around. I don't even think that had anything. I was just a weird kid. I'm still a weird kid.
Well, so what was the impact then of you? Did other boys in particular? Make fun or tease? What happened?
No, I think the thing that happened was I was sort of drawn to the same kind of kids, I wasn't the only one, the only weird kid. So I think I was able to find good, closer friends because we sort of could relate to one thing and bonds were tighter, And I mean, I was still my little sister's like my best friend. And she's because we're like a year apart. And so I always had her. She was always, there. So, I had a tight-knit group of friends, and luckily my brother was sort of like the tough guy in the neighborhood, so nobody really ever picked on me, except for him. I mean, he was the only one that
that helps.
Yeah.
What besides your sisters, what else was the rest of your family like?
Well, my mom, she worked a lot, and my stepfather's been around since I was a kid. He was around. He was a good guy, but they both worked quite a bit. And so me and my siblings and we're kind of left our own devices and just running around the neighborhood.
You eventually ended up in Kansas City, but it wasn't a direct route. You've lived quite a few places.
Yeah, for a while I was a and through different things. I mean, I've been homeless in Canada. I've been an evangelical missionary in the Philippines. I was like a computer salesman in Costa Rica, and I've done a
well. Who million. Hasn't done?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah.
And even in Germany, is that right?
Yeah, when I was a kid, we lived in Germany for like 4 years. Yeah, my stepdad was in the military, and so we went from like the hood to like military. Suburban neighborhood in Germany, which is like a weird experience.
Yeah. So having this experience of as you said, you were being a weird kid in with this household full of girls. You lived in all these different places. How did these environments shape you as the artist that you would go on to become?
I think I sort of learned to it became too difficult to try and transform myself into what people thought I should be because I was just things were constantly changing. So I became I just was me all the time after a while, and I gave up on trying to fit any sort of any mold, I just wanted, and that's why I think people ask me why I do so many different things, and I'm just like, well, because nothing's stopping me from really doing those things. I can just kind of do and create creatively. I mean, yeah, I don't like being held back, so I just do what I want.
Well, one of your poems is about your growing up. It's called American Beefcake, and I know it's a little bit long, but it tells a good amount of your story, I think. Mm-hmm. Do you want to set this up for us at all? How would you describe what this is about?
It's basically it's like just a short biography. Like, I wanted to fit, you know, that weirdness into one thing, you know, and just explain my it like I think it just sort of explains itself, you know.
Well, I would love to hear it if you would be willing to share that with us.
This, absolutely.
This is the poem American Beefcake by Chico Sierra.
In a large bowl about the size of a one-bedroom apartment, we'll call it modest, quaint, or even cozy. In actuality, a sardine can made of cinder block. Combined siblings of varying age and race. Two chocolate, three cinnamon. The last still has us all confused. All musk of a native, Spanish base. Mix well, 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. Mother returns. Home from work, saute in a pan until the older three raise the younger three. If they begin to pop and sizzle, pour in mother's love, discipline and soothe. Keeping all ingredients from burning to a crisp. Season with a mix of Tejano, mariachi, soul, and late 80s to early 90s R&B. When the six have browned and flavored, add the stepfather. This ingredient must be silent but kind, smell of Newports, have a taste for Crown Royal. It is vital that if a stepfather must be ripe, black as night. Place all ingredients on a plane and send them to another continent, somewhere unfamiliar. Let's say somewhere in Europe. Let them stew in culture shock for about 4 years. As soon as they seem to be comfortable, throw them right back in the skillet. Turn up the heat. Some separation will occur. Beefcake will go through several physical changes. It will look unappetizing. Most likely, begin to smell odd, be covered in acne. Do not fret. It gets better. When the beefcake begins to rise and show interest in female peers, it is important you add finely diced political opinions, pornography, marijuana, and punk rock. Be sure they are added with absolute disregard for how it affects the beefcake. This will add an air of confusion to the taste. The beefcake will wander, explore religion, reject religion, accept religion, then through study, misery, and an eventual dislike for pews and Bibles, will again reject religion. Stir lightly as you watch him fall in love very easily, with several women, some simultaneously. Flavor the beefcake with as much alcohol as you can find. Knead the beefcake until every relationship he begins will end in disillusionment and heartache. You may regret what you were doing and want to stop. Do not. The beefcake is a big boy. He will be fine. Character is a vital ingredient. If overlooked, the beefcake will be bland. Though he may do well financially, the beefcake will lack spice and flavor. Bake at 350 degrees Fahrenheit, 175 degrees Celsius, for 1 hour.
It's Chico Sierra reading his poem, American Beefcake. You described that a minute ago as sort of a mini autobiography.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel like you would have been able to tell that story a different way? Was there something about putting it in poetry that I don't know, helped you with it?
Yeah, I think the sort of ability to have the form be whatever it wants to be, I think that's what I like about poetry. You can have it structured in different forms, like haikus and things like that, or you can just have a list of things that make no sense at all, no punctuation, no question marks, just a list of things that you think about, you know, and it can be something that's good.
Well, and you even structured it at times like a recipe, which is, in fact, usually a list of things.
Yeah, yeah, and that was what I was going for initially. And at first, it was just a big chunk of words, and I had a few people look at it, and they're just like, yeah, you should separate that out. It makes no, like, sense at all, you know.
Well, and speaking of separation, I mean, I was really struck by one line in there that after the after the kids are thrown back in the skillet, you say, some separation will occur.
Yeah, I think that sort of, I wanted to speak to the idea that there was a time where so we were in Germany for 4 years, and me and my sister and, you know, family members were pretty tight. And I think when I came back, I mean, I was going through a lot. We're back in El Paso, and I was finding new friends and, like, not spending a lot of time with my family or my sister. So I think there was a time where we were just kind of, like, all of us were sort of not connected at all. And, you know, that changed after a while. We got back together. But I just wanted to speak to that in a small way so that, like, you know, just pay, like, some sort of attention to it.
I mean, that's something about poetry, isn't it? That these big things do have to sort of get treated in a small way, as you say.
Yeah.
How do you go about that? What's that process of writing like for you, of sort of boiling down your experience and your emotions into these just very few words?
I think what I try to, and this is hard things, like when I write, I can just sit down and write. I don't have any ideas, any sort of like subject matter that I'm trying to touch on. It's just like things that sort of come out. And I try to use like imagery to elicit feelings, you know, so like, and that makes it easier. Like I can use like the idea of a buffalo or a gypsy woman or something like that to just try and elicit a feeling and then speak to that feeling and then just crunch it down into a small little thing, you know, because I think that's important to me. Is because I think when I'm writing a lot, I'm also trying to speak to myself, if that makes sense.
Say more about that.
I was talking to somebody recently, and I was like, I'm just trying to get, like, free therapy. Like, so when I write stuff, I you know, and some of it's subconscious, I'll just write stuff. And then my process is I'll write several things and then hand them over to like, people I sort of respect. There's a good group of, like, a circle of people that are really close. Jose Faust, Gustavo Aybar, my friend Erica Noguera.
We had a poem by Jose Faust on our program.
Yeah,
just
he's really good. And my friend Charlie Upchurch. Yeah. He's amazing. So I give that, all my stuff to them and have them look it over. And then they give it back to me and I can look at it and be like, so that's what I was trying to say. Like, to, you know.
But you're processing not just the poetry, but also your life.
Yeah. And so that's what I mean. Like getting free therapy is really cool.
This book of poetry that you're reading from, how did it come to be?
It's through the pop poetry. I don't remember like how they phrase it. Spartan Press, which is a press run by Prospero's bookstore. They started doing this pop poetry series, and every month they do a different local poet. And they've been doing it, I think this is the second year.
Yeah.
And I've had several friends, Jose Faust being one of them, who had, and Gustavo as well, had their books released by them. And it's been awesome to see like local poets putting out these books and having these book releases, and it just becomes like a small event. And Yeah.
I know you're part of a group called the Latino Writers Collective. Some of these folks are involved in that, right?
Yeah.
What is that group? It seems to be doing a lot of things here in the Kansas City area.
Yeah, we've been active off and on, and if I was going to credit them, like credit anybody for like bringing me out of like just being like a day laborer who writes poetry, you know, at home by himself or paints on his own. Be the Latino Writers Collective. They've sort of like, I became part of the group, and it was just an awesome experience to like be able to be around a group of people. We would read each other's poems and like sort of give feedback. And they also do a lot of really awesome community work. Like we've done workshops with migrant farm workers, kids, different groups around Kansas City, different schools. It's been great.
There's an element of that that community that it sounds like you find there that reminded me of something else in your poem. You mentioned accepting religion, rejecting religion, accepting religion again.
Yeah.
You mentioned being a missionary kid. How does religion and spirituality sort of intersect with your life as an artist?
I think it still speaks. I don't. There was a while I considered myself an atheist. I wouldn't say that anymore, just because I don't like shutting anything out. And through, you know, especially this last year, I've sort of like explored the ideas of religion, but or spirituality. But it does still, like, it still comes up in my work. You know, like, it'll, you know, there's random parts where, you know, that stuff's still in my mind. I try to use it like as a like a common icon, you know, like I know like people, most people understand like Christian iconography or any sort of religious iconography. And I use little bits from different religions to sort of speak to feelings, like I said. And it's not something I think about a lot, but sometimes it does pop up in like my subconscious stuff when I'm like free writing, it'll just come through, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's still around. I try to explore my own spirituality and the ideas of how I have about religion, but I try not to speak to anybody else's. I don't like messing with that idea, you know?
Yeah. I do know, of course, that a lot of that was shaped by your childhood, your parents, your family as well.
And yeah.
I know that there's a poem you've written called "To the Fortune Teller," mm-hmm. which makes reference to the home of your grandmother, among other things, right?
The home of my mother.
Okay.
Yeah. There's sort of like I wanted to speak to the idea of nostalgia, in a way, and I think that's where that comes from.
Letting you find it there.
Yeah.
In the book, I'll mention that the book is called "Air Becomes Glass," and Chico Sierra is the author. He's also a musician and a visual artist, and we'll talk a little about that too. But here's this poem, "To the Fortune Teller."
My memories soaked in floor cleaner. I find them in my mother's kitchen, where I found half my smile. The remainder still tucked beneath my discontent. I ask the gypsy woman, why is there satisfaction in new things? I've been looking for that old stuff, that pile of old, musty, dusty stuff, that stuff that smells like honey, that stuff that smells like pine salt. My mother mopped the floor with. It smells like gunpowder, like a lit match, sulfur on charcoal, shotgun shells and fireworks. The gypsy woman said, you will always be a mystery to yourself. You will be the only person to break your heart. She was blind and sweet and smelled like Palo Santo and cigarettes. She held me for a while. Her hair was like straw. What kept a dry woman from catching fire? She touched my thoughts. She burst into flames and disappeared, like a whisper in someone else's conversation. She took my secrets, the ones hidden from myself. My mother is still mopping the kitchen floor.
Chico Sierra, which came first for you, the writing or the music or the visual art?
I think the visual art. I mean, I've been drawing since I was a kid, you know, and like once somebody sees that you're doing something and they're just like, you know, when they see you drawing or doing artwork, I think people just sort of are like, you're an artist. That's what you're going to be. And I think I started writing around like when I was in middle school. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like I was trying to like sort of, I wasn't trying to write poetry. I was just writing things mm-hmm. and felt good, you know, so I kept doing it. And I've been doing it since. You know.
So the writing has been there for a long time, but this is just the first time you've put it together as a book of poetry.
Yeah, like I've always had poetry, and I've done like, there was a time where I did like spoken word and things like that. And, mm-hmm. and around high school, I just started writing songs. And so that sort of was my outlet for the writing. And, you know, and
How different is it to write a song than a poem?
I think with a song, like, my process, I'm not sure how it is with everybody else, but when I sit down to write a song, I just sit there with my guitar and I'll play my guitar and I'll just sing random words until something fits. And then that song will be based around that. It'll have no real meaning. And I mean, there are times where like I've written songs about certain subjects, but mostly it's about how it sounds as opposed to the feeling I'm trying to capture.
And do you feel like you are most fully expressing yourself as an artist when you can join words and music as in a song? Or do you feel like the other modes are also fully expressive of you?
I don't think any of it fully expresses me. That's why I do everything. It's like that's what I tell us talking, you know, I tell people all the time, like, I have a hard time sort of when people ask me to give them an idea of like what my artwork is supposed to express. I'm like, well, if I wanted to say it, I would just write it and then you could read it.
Right.
Because I don't know. Like, I mean, most of the time I'm just doing what I do and trying to figure it out myself. And I never want to I never want to give anyone an idea about how they should feel about what they're reading about my work or seeing in my paintings. And sometimes it's an experiment, you know, like I want to write something. I want somebody to read it, tell me what they think,
uh-huh,
and hope that that we have the same feeling. But also it's sort of like, it's also amazing to see somebody that has a completely different idea about what I'm writing or what I'm painting or any of that stuff. Like if they have a completely different experience than me, it's fascinating. So either way, you know, as long as they don't hate it or think I'm it's offensive, I'm good with it.
As long as you're provoking something,
yeah,
it doesn't
yeah.
really matter
yeah.
what it's provoking.
And I always hope it's a positive thing,
yeah.
something good, you know. Like some people just want a reaction. I'm constantly hoping that it's the glimmer of hope. And you might not see that in some of my poems are very like dark, seem sad, but I think there's like a glimmer of hope in there somewhere.
You've lived a lot of places. Has Kansas City, where you've settled, been a good place to be doing this artistic work?
Yeah, I think it's perfect. Like, I think an artist's ability to everything's accessible. Like I have access to amazing artists, you know. And I think in a bigger city, I would have a harder time getting in touch with people. I love to collaborate with people. Like I'm doing a video series with Julio Mortera, who does stuff, and Jose Faust, who I hang out with all the time. And he's one of the most, you know, he's an amazing artist in town. Like he's just, and he's, I can call him and hang out with him. And
yeah.
There's several artists around town that like it. Yeah, you just, in a town like Kansas City, you're able to contact them. And I feel like in a smaller town, those artists aren't there. Larger cities, you have no, like,
yeah,
it's impossible.
Right. Well, I want to hear one more poem from you before we go, and
sure.
I would love for you to read "Saudade," and that's I know that's a Portuguese word. What does that mean anyway?
I'll read the actual definition. I think my definition.
You've done some research to prepare for this question.
Yeah. Well, I had it. I thought I had it like figured out, but then I read more. And so the definition is deep emotional state of nostalgic or melancholic longing for an absent something or someone. So it's sort of like an unknown
wow.
thing, right?
There's no one word can capture that
yeah,
in English,
yeah.
I don't think.
And I like the sound of the word, and I thought it was a beautiful word on its own. And then, so that sort of led me to write this poem. And I'll go ahead and read it.
Please do.
I was a buffalo on the plains of Kansas. I was a leaf floating on the Amazon River. I was the whispers between two lovers on a spring morning. It was crisp. 1,000 lips formed out of my skin and kissed the breeze. We were paradise. We were Eden. No apples, just peaches. I saw you with both of my eyes. You were a summer before I could remember when. We would eat fruit and let the juices drip down our chins. On our bare chests, the flies would share our meal. You were a blade of grass that I saw fit to pick, to clean my teeth with, to ease my mind with, to waste some time with. You were my first memory. I was an icebox. You wanted ice cream. It was nice to be looked at like there was something inside of me.
That's Chico Sierra reading his poem "Saudade." It's from his book. The book is called "Air Becomes Glass." Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you.
He has a reading, by the way, on September 15th at Raven Bookstore in Lawrence, and you can find out more information about that. When we come back, we'll switch to another artist who practices a different kind of art that has made its way into a new book, but no quiet poetic reflections here. This is Brave Teenage Rhinos and Giant Flying Fish. Scribe brings his graffiti to the children's book page. I'm Brian Ellison, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back.